name's Edgar. I'm out of college.
First, I'd like to thank you all for your prayers and my little battle with cancer and my chemo treatment. The reason I'm walking is so I got blood clots. And I know you'll continue praying for me. That is a little crunch, but anyway. You know, early on this year, old lawnmower Danny used to, I'd be walking up, he'd say, "Smile, damn it." Well, you know, I couldn't, because I was hurting. And that happens sometimes. We get physically sick. And, you know, like they told me about my alcoholism, I just, you know, got to keep fighting it. And, you know, it was amazing. I went down to about 130 pounds. And the last time I did that was almost 12 years ago. On November the 1st, 1993, I caught an airplane to go to Atchison, Kansas. It's just outside Kansas City. And there's a little treatment center out there, the Valley Hope chain. And they have a Benedictine college there and a monastery. And it was kind of neat. They told me that I flew to St. Louis or Kansas City, and they didn't have old granddad on the plane. It really made me mad. So I just said, well, I won't drink anything. So my last drink was the night before. And they said, these two little fellows that picked you up, they had white shirts and white hats on. I'm sorry, yellow shirts, and they were bright. I got off this plane, and there were these two fellows waiting for me to drive me 35 miles to Atchison. I felt like an idiot. And they got me in this van, you know, it said Valley Hope, whatever on it. And so we rode out through the country, it seemed like forever, and we got about a 2 mile hill. And that's where Valley Hope was. That's where I went to treatment. So I walked in the door. There was a fellow about the size of Idaho Joe. He said, "Are you new here?" And I said, "Yeah." He gave me a hug. I looked at him. He said, "Hugs, not drugs." He said, "I love you, man." You know, I give a lot of people hugs today. I tell about 10 people a day I love them. If you're not doing that, you're missing out on part of life. You know, like Diane, we gave a hug today. I used to get drunk with her and her mother quite a few years ago. Bless her heart, her mother's in heaven now. You know, I didn't understand what that hug meant then. You know, go in this treatment center, like a lot of them, they've got some fellow welcomes you in, and say they've got AA meetings, I wasn't interested in that. Said they've got a chapel, I wasn't interested in that. So I just more or less isolated for a couple of days. They put me in a little bed to detox me, but I was fine, you know. All I wanted was a drink. But they didn't have any there, so finally after a couple of days, somebody said, "Do you want to go to AA meeting?" And I said, "Well, I guess so." You know, really didn't realize why I was there. I just knew I had a lot of problems in my life. So I go to my first AA meeting, and it was okay. And the next day, a little girl says, "Have you been to chapel?" And I said, "No." And she says, "Y'all try going in there." And I mean, I was raised Catholic and almost became a priest at one time. Can you imagine that? You want a confession to me? Anyway, we had a good time. Anyway, so I go into chapel in just a small little place, and I started crying. I stayed in there 45 minutes because I didn't feel good about me. You know, and sometimes when we get in situations like that, you don't know what to do. You know, I had a counselor there. I went to him and talked to him about it. Now, first time I met Bob, my counselor, he let me go on for about 15 minutes. He says, "You're a damn liar, aren't you? You're just like me." Because everything I told him was a damn lie. And if you all been to treatment or you had a sponsor, you only will tell them half the damn truth anyway, because most alcoholics just lie. You know, but Bob helped me through all this. And, you know, I stayed there 28 days and everything, but, you know, they started talking about the steps, the first step, second step, third step. And after that little deal at the church, I wanted to change my life in the little chapel. And I got a hold of the first three steps, and I did the first three steps with my counselor. I got a hold of the fourth step. I did the fourth step in a day and a half. I didn't do anything else. To the best of my ability, I wrote out my fourth step. And they asked me to look back into my childhood. You know, I was raised in West Virginia. I have a brother and sister which are 2 years older than me, or 1 year, something like that. And, you know, I had a real good life. My father was a millionaire twice. liquor belly both times. My father was in Alcoholics Anonymous in the 50s. I didn't know anything about it. I worked with him then. I was old enough to help him out. He had produce markets, fruits and vegetables. And that kind of work, you start about 5 o'clock in the morning, you work late at 9 at night. And I did that. It was just a way of life for me. I helped my father, you know. And, you know, we had a pretty good life. You know, I remember my father coming home drunk and beating me with a back white snake foot. And, but that's, you know, that's when he was drinking. My sister and brother, they don't have any drug problems or alcohol problems. It was, I guess I was kind of resentful. Until I was a freshman in high school, I was 5'2". Just doesn't go any further. They just call me Little Eddie. My uncle, he was an alcoholic too. He drank a little bit. And that was my nickname, Little Eddie. You know, that used to make me mad. You know, I was always too little to do anything. I guess I carried that resentment. I grew that eventually, just like, but, you know, it was just something that stuck with me. I wanted to fit in with everybody, like most alcoholics. And that's not always easy. You know, but I got through high school and went to Catholic school and stuff like that. And I was a very good student, but I didn't like school. I went to 3 high schools in 1 year. My military service, I spent 3 days at Greenbrier Military School. I didn't like it, so I left. Which is, my father didn't say anything, you know, I didn't like it. And I started drinking maybe in high school or something like that, or some of these Syrian and Lebanese parties I used to go to with my father's business acquaintances. They all drank. So that's, you know, I'm not sure when I had my first drink, or my, I don't know when my last one was, but, you know, it's, through high school I had a lot of good friends, I thought. So I went through, you know, you date a lot in high school, and, you know, through drinking, I mean, like that, even in high school, I heard a lot of people. I just thought this is the way you treated people, as long as I came out on top. You know, from there I went on to college in West Virginia, Marshall, and, you know, then I don't know when my drinking escalated, I was just freer a little bit. Joined the fraternity, SA, and, you know, that gives you the right to drink, I guess. And, you know, I spent 5 years there in college, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I was married there for a year, I guess, 8 months to a lovely lady. Matter of fact, we wrecked a motorcycle. I think I totaled 4 cars during high school at 2 motorcycle wrecks. And on a little Vespa deal. Riding this damn little thing at about 1 o'clock in the morning, we get the back end of the Volkswagen. I had a concussion, she broke both her wrists. And it was the same time, the reason I didn't go to the military is the same time Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, funked his physical the same week. And the mental part of it, I funked mine. Because I didn't remember anything, I was just getting out of the hospital. You know, but it's little episodes like that. Every car I wrecked, it was because I was drinking. You know, and in college, I went back to my hometown, and I got with this fellow, and we opened a nightclub. Now, for an alcoholic, you need to own a nightclub, because you got control over the liquor, you know. And it was in Marietta, Ohio, and it was quite an experience owning a nightclub. And then from there I moved to Florida and a few other places and got married once down, I guess, in Atlanta. And, well, it's alright. We were married for about a year. She's from New York. And she couldn't fit in down here, and I went to New York to try to live there, and I couldn't live in New York, you know. And so we just departed, and my drinking just escalated. You know, I guess I got married again down here and had two beautiful daughters, and Leah and Rebecca. And Rebecca's probably been more meetings than most people here. She's probably been more jail meetings than most people here. But you know, it's a great thing to have daughters. You know, and I had various job opportunities and stuff like that, and I was usually successful at them, like most alcoholics. And finally, it got so bad, I was given a presentation to Coca-Cola one day, and I don't even remember what I did. I just remember afterwards, I went and called that 800 number to get in that treatment facility. I was drinking every day for 10, 20 years, whatever. And you know how we manipulate credit cards, so we all increase our debt, you know. I just had a lot of personal problems, but, you know, I don't know what made me call that 800 number after that presentation, but that saved my life. That's what got me in Valley Hope. You know, when I got out of Valley Hope, I came here. They gave me some phone numbers here, and I called two or three of them and around the Atlanta area, and I asked for this, got this one fellow, a lady on the phone. I said, "Is Joe so-and-so there?" She said, "If you see that son of a..." Anyway, he was out drinking. He was one of the good alcoholics. But I called this number here to Hal Place, and a few of you might remember Lisa Lawrence. She answered the phone, young lady. She spent 30 minutes during the meeting talking to me because she cared. Say you cared about other alcoholics, male or female, it didn't matter. You know, the next night I walked in here, she knew me. She knew that I was new. When we first walk in here, we don't fit into nowhere. Once you walk in, you already fit. You may not know it. You know, a few years after that, Lisa's sister was working with me down, ran some Olympic stores, and got a call one morning. Lisa died, got killed in an automobile crash. She was coming from a meeting in Douglasville and towed her car, and I had to tell her sister. And, you know, Lisa will always have a place in my heart. You know, Idaho Joe was at my first meeting. I think Todd was too. Todd and I used to work together. We sat and drank together and drug together and all this crap for the last 6 or 7 years, something like that. You know, and we had a good time. I think, anyway. He hasn't changed. He was nuts then, he's nuts now. Hell, you know, it's all right. But, you know, think about, when I came in here, I didn't know what to do. It took a long time to say, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Edgar, I'm an alcoholic. I had a lot of problems with my daughters. I had a lot of problems, hell with everything. My marriage was shot to hell anyway after 20 years of drinking and drugging while being married and building up credit cards and just, you know, I traveled a good bit then. It was shot to hell, you know. But I saw a ray of hope when I came in here. You know, they say Idaho Joe was at my first meeting here, and after about a month or two, I said, "Where are you going?" One night after meeting, he said, "I'm going to First Step." And I said, "Well, can I go?" I didn't even know what the hell it was. You know, and that's the little treatment center they had down here on Hawkinsville Road, you know. And Joe got me involved in that. You know, sometimes we don't... So a lot of people just come in here and sit on their ass and leave. Attend the meeting and leave. And that's absolutely wonderful. But you're missing the best part of your life by not getting involved with other people in the program. Not reaching out to people in the jails like Gerald when he's in jail. You know. but, you know, it's just a neat feeling you get when one drunk tries to help another. You know, it cannot be explained, I don't believe. You know, I got a sponsor when I first got in. Scott, there's a softball back there. Scott was big with the City of Roswell softball deal. And you know what? Scott was only my sponsor for 9 months because he passed away. And I sat back there where Robert was and cried for 3 days. Because that man really meant something to me. During these 9 months, I called him 2 times. You know, a lot of people say, call your sponsor every day. I didn't have to. Scott was here every day, and I was here every day. I told him one time, I needed to talk to him. The other time, I wondered where in the hell he was. And he was with Nancy down the AA convention down Macon or somewhere down there, you know. But, you know, it tore me up when Scott passed away. He was the first person I could really feel that I could trust. And I could walk in this room and he'd say, "How you doing?" I said, "I'm fine." You know, he'd point back here before they had the NA room back here, and we'd go back there and talk. He didn't have to say a word. He just pointed. Because he knew something was wrong with me. Maybe I was upset at something at work, you know. And Scott told me an awful lot. At his funeral was his wife, his ex-wife, and his ex-wife. He had two ex-wives. At his funeral, they all talked about how this man had brought the family together. I'm talking about your exes and exes and that shit. You know, that's hard to do. But he earned their respect back. And that's what we can do in this program. We can't make up for what we've done in the past necessarily. First off, we don't have to hurt anybody today. You know, and you know, it's amazing we can help somebody if we really want to. You know, it wasn't too long, and I think Todd did, as a matter of fact. They had these things about they needed a treasure to have a place, and I knew about counting money, steal money, stuff like that, but so they volunteered me and elected me treasurer of the place. And then I had to move into chairperson, then trustee and that kind of stuff. You know, and that's a good experience. You know, I don't go to committee meetings anymore because I passed that on. You know, there's so many people in this room that's helped me so much. And one of them sitting back here is Harry O. You know, my younger daughter Rebecca's in a wheelchair. And I used to sit down on a deck and drink and get drunk, wanting her to be a real child. Wanting her to be a whole child. I could see the kids playing out on the street, and I wanted her to do that. That's not what she does. You know, I met Harry tomorrow one time, and the guy asked him, I said, Harry, how long did it take you to accept your accident, to accept this? I think he said 2 or 3 years. To accept that you're going to be in a wheelchair, or you're not going to be like everybody else. You know, and that helped me greatly. It took me a while to accept my daughter Rebecca as she is. You know, it's one of the greatest gifts this program has given me. Every day we talk. There's not a day that goes by in this world if we don't talk. When we enter conversations, I love you. You know, if you all just say goodbye, you're missing out. Everybody needs to say, I love you. They need to hear it. And we need to say it. You know, it took me about 5 years being sober with my older daughter and I to start rebuilding the relationship. Now we have something that's beautiful. She took her mother's side. I couldn't do anything besides just keep on doing what I'm doing. You know, and it's not easy. People have bad maybe thoughts or bad, all they think of is what bad happened in the past. They can't see that there might be something good coming out of the future, you know. And it's, you know, it's not easy for us. You know, I was sponsoring a fellow that God put different people in my life throughout my sobriety. I was sponsoring a fellow that got in jail, Dale. And so I got into Cobb County Jail scene. And a fellow walked through with a Marshall University sweatshirt on when I was visiting with him. I said, hey, Joe, you know, so after the meeting, he said, I'll see you after your visitation. So I went up there and talked to him. He said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm just visiting a fellow that's in a program. He said, oh, we're trying to start another AA meeting here. Joe and I went to college together. We were fraternity brothers at Marshall. I was flying to Kansas City, as I used to do, well, I still do when I can, back to my reunion out there. And he said, well, when you get back, get with me, we'll start another AA meeting. I went there about 3.5 years. Dale got out in 15 months. I used to drag Robert's ass to the jail. And a few other people, Mike Cook used to go, Frank used to go, a lot of the people that are in that little booth used to go, Jim used to go, a lot of them. And some people can't go every week and that's fine. Some people won't go back to jail once they've been there. But, you know, I never spent much time in jail. Night here, night there, getting drunk, getting a DUI or something like that. But, you know, some of these people belong in jail. Some of them maybe just bad situations, they got caught. jail's not a pretty place to be, you know. But, you know, I went there. I think at one time I had more friends in the Cobb County Jail than I did here. You know, I went 4 Christmas Eves in a row. Joe asked me if I would have these meetings Christmas Eve to help the morale. You know, I said I would. And one, I think it's the last one I went to on Christmas Eve, there was 55 inmates there, and me. We had an hour and a half meeting. The meeting was on gratitude. And 40 of those men cried. A lot of them, yes, Christmas Eve, they should be home with their parents, with their kids, with their family. But we're not all that lucky. Some of us have been in treatment centers over the holidays, and it's tough. You know, it's tough any time, you know, in jail or one's treatment centers. But, you know, just to be there for somebody. See, I had a freedom. When I walked out that door and that iron door slammed, I was free. Because I didn't drink that day. And I didn't drug. You know, and it's not easy. I know a lot of people in this room have gone back out. Maybe once, twice, several times. But, you know, you don't... Thank you. You don't have to drink today. And that's basically simple. You know, there are things we can do that we don't have to drink today. If we make it to today, maybe tomorrow is a little bit better. You know, it may not be. You know, I got a divorce in here, and after I was in here about 2 or 3 years, you know, hooked up with a lady in the program. Well, at that time, she was married and I was married. I don't suggest that. Yeah, because you know what both of you are doing? Poor me. Okay? We had a beautiful relationship for a while. It's something that didn't work out for her. You know, we both got divorced and we both got together. It was something made in hell, I think. Yeah, well, I thought it was all right. But no, it's, you know, if two people are single in here, if they're working the program, taking the steps, doing the best of their ability, what this program suggests, there's no reason why two people can't have love in this program. And I really don't give a damn about how much time somebody has. If you are trying to take the steps to the best of your ability and working your program and putting your program before this other person, you're going to have a stronger program and you won't drink. You know, after that divorce, it was devastating to me, and I think I did go overboard. I took about 50 pills and went to bed. I'd written goodbye notes to everybody in the world. Anyway, but she came in and found me, and they put me in treatment down at Charter Anchor, and they saved my life down there. You know, they locked me up in the mental ward, and you know, I felt at home. A lot of people say they're afraid, you know, these people are crazy. Well, I fit right in with them. Hell, you know, I climb walls, you know. There was one poor little girl there, she kept ruining her nails and like that. They kept building the wall higher. She kept finding ways to escape. But she couldn't run far, you know. And, you know, I got through that, and I've had several job changes and moves and stuff like that. And they're all for, they're all a living experience. You know, I was living down in Fairburn for a while, a company I was representing down there, and well, let me back up. I was living up here. I was not living with Carmen. I was living down in her basement. Anyway, I still think she carries a gun, but it's all right. Anyway, I got a phone call in California, and this lady. Name was Debbie. And supposedly, I'd had a baby when I was in college. This girl did. I knew nothing about it. And this girl was trying to find her birth parents. And this was the mother. And she told me this lady was trying to get a hold of me. My daughter, I guess. And You know, I finally made it. She called me, I guess. My daughter did. She lived in Atlanta, which is America. I knew nothing about her. She married a neurosurgeon here. And they only lived here about 2 years. But we talked on the phone. We finally met. This girl was 34 years old. We met at the Galleria. She wanted an open place to where we could meet, you know. And when we met, we shook hands. As a matter of fact, we shook hands the first 5 times we met. After her mother had the baby, she put it up for adoption. Her name was Monica, and Monica was adopted. I had to get into, like I did today, the books and stuff, the adoption experience, what it is to be adopted. It's a lot like being an alcoholic. You feel abandoned. You have a lot of fears in your life, you know. And thank God I had the insight to study about adoption, you know. And we tried to make a relationship go for a while. I have a grandson. He was 7 years old at the time. And after a couple meetings, Monica and I met. We finally met at Barnes & Noble. I got to meet my grandson and his father, and that was a real neat deal. You know, about a year and a half later, I guess she was going through a divorce or separation from her husband. Now, I don't give advice on things like that, not even to my daughters. But I got a call one morning, and I guess this fellow she'd been dating, that Monica had shot herself, killed herself. And that was one of the hardest things I ever went through in my life. You know, thank God for the fellowship. The fellows down in Fairburn, the ladies and men down there, you know, this was on Saturday morning. And I really didn't know what to do. You know, I tried to call her husband, but he wouldn't talk to me. And then, anyway, he said, this is not the time to talk. But he had... Anyway, I go up to the funeral. I find out it's in Pennsylvania, because that's where she was raised. You know, and I'm the only person I've ever met there was Jim, her husband. And, you know, I go to the funeral, get back down here, and they had another thing for her down here. You know, I went to it and I met her birth mother. She flew in from California, which is a neat deal, you know. But, you know, the next day I checked myself back into treatment, back into Charter Anchor, because I was either going to drink, shoot you, or shoot me. The program's taught me to ask for help. This isn't a macho deal here. When we need help, we need to talk to somebody. We need to ask for help. If it's the treat, I needed to be locked up. You know, I blamed God for a long time. You know, things happen in people's life. Since that happened almost 3 years ago, 3 years or so, October, you know, I met a lot of people in the fellowship that have lost children. And if they go through an anniversary date, I get calls, I call people, because you're going through an emotional state. And a lot of people drink over it. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. And you know what's a beautiful part of it? If it wasn't for you all in this program, I would have never met my daughter. I had almost 2 years with her. I've got pictures of her. I called for a year trying to get a hold of my grandson. Her father won't return my phone calls. So I got to put that on the back burner. You know, it's not... we're going to go through a lot of things in this program. And yes, some of you may have to drink over it. But there's another way. And if you're God and these people, you know... I haven't had to pick up a drink for almost 12 years. You know, I've got lung cancer. Going through my chemotherapy and all that fun shit, you know. Last week I went to the doctor and I've got blood clots in my leg. You know, but I'm getting shots and we'll get through this stuff. If I didn't have this program and didn't learn what you all taught me, how to get through situations like this. Hell yes, sometimes I isolate. So I did. But by that 5:40, about 5:30, 4:30 or 5 o'clock, Edgar's trying to go to a meeting. Drag your ass in here whether you want to or not. You know, this program has given us all so much. Sometimes we don't realize what it is. It saved my life more than once. You know, it's just a miracle I'm standing here. And I still go through pain. You know, then I have the good side. I have Rebecca. I have Leah. I have you all. You know, and it's not, sometimes we go through things that we may not understand. I'll never understand what happened to my daughter. But maybe it's none of my business. But, you know, like I say, miracles happened in my life, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for this fellowship. And I love you all. Thank you.